Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
So, without fail.
Yes.
Every Super Bowl Sunday of my adult life.
Uh-huh.
25 and on.
Right.
I have cooked a meal.
Is that right?
Yeah. I've never done that on Thanksgiving. I've never done that on Christmas. But every Super Bowl I cook
something.
So, what
are you cooking?
So, I wanted to find out what you were going to cook, but here's what I'm thinking of cooking.
All right.
Is chicken Philly cheesesteak sandwiches.
Ooh, yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
Chicken, you know what I mean? Some mushrooms, some onions, some peppers.
No beef. You're not using beef on your Philly. So it's not actually a Philly cheesesteak.
No, because it would be made with chicken.
Right, so it's, it's a chicken Kelly.
Yeah, but I don't have a grill.
Have a grill.
No, we're not allowed to have it.
Not allowed to have a grill. What kind of country is this?
Yeah, exactly.
A man should have a grill.
Well, you can't have one in my building. These buildings with the balconies and stuff, you can't have a grill out
there.
They'd be burning down, dude.
We had a grill.
What are you going to cook? But, John, I would be worried about you with a grill anywhere, even in open field.
Me and Richie had a grill back in the day.
Did you?
Yeah,
what'd you do?
We cooked.
Oh, yeah, right there in the house?
Yeah.
Good. What about, what are you going to cook for Super Bowl?
Well, usually we do a cornucopia of appetizers.
Hey, now.
So I'm expecting the lovely and talented Georgianne to come up with her patented blue ribbon roll-ups.
Are those the pickles surrounded by cheese and meat,
no,
and then they're
buddy.
Cut like little dollars?
No. This is a spinach thing.
Okay.
Wrapped with bacon.
Hey, now.
It is phenomenal.
Anything with bacon.
Perhaps some spinach artichoke dip be on display.
Yeah.
Her patented chicken wings that she does. Mm. I'm not sure but they're good. And, so we'll have all
What
of
are
that.
You contributing?
I will be eating.
Ah.
The
So you're will you procure any of the stuff from the local schnooks?
Or, it's highly possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good for you.
Yeah. So you're cooking your chicken.
Yeah,
stuff.
I'm gonna cook chicken Philly cheesesteak for the Super Bowl. I love the Super Bowl because I don't like to go to a party. I don't want to be with a bunch of other people.
Ditto.
I want to be with four or five folks.
Ditto.
I don't mind a little conversation.
Ditto.
But not too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I want to eat some good food. And let's be honest, the Super Bowl goes so late, right? It'll be 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock by the time Taylor Swift goes down there and kisses Kelsey on the cheek and all that. It's 10:30, 11 o'clock. You just want to go to bed. You just want to go to bed.
Kickoff's at 5:37.
Is it?
So that puts the end of the game somewhere around 8:52.
Well, no way.
And
you got to remember they're going to have a 45-minute half.
That's you got to take that into account.
Kendrick Lamar.
It becomes
essentially
it becomes essentially the length of a college football game.
Yeah.
And and then the post game, and here's the problem with this game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like either team.
Really?
I really don't. And we just had
don't
this.
You like some of the people? Like I like Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. Well, no, the people are great, but the teams. So.
I'm with you on Philly, though. I mean,
two years ago, this is just a replay, but we're going to have our NFL insider on to break this game down for us next hour.
And I don't know, but maybe it's now I'm becoming one of these St. Louis people who's sick of all the St. Louis people who are Chiefs fans. Like, where were you when we had the Rams? Where were you when we were needing to sell out a dome? Now you're
good.
Yeah, but now you're running around with Kansas City. Come on.
Don't blame the fans for not selling out the dome. The team tanked on purpose.
I'm with you, okay, but at the end of the day, you know what I'm talking about. There were people who suddenly went from being running around with Rams horns on their heads with, tomahawks in their hands.
Do you think for a minute if the Kansas City Royals sold and moved to, I don't know, Nashville.
Right.
Do you for a minute think anybody in Kansas City would start rooting for the Cardinals? No. Of course not.
No, but I think that's exactly what happened in the NFL. People started rooting for the Chiefs.
Well, there's some misguided souls out there.
They're everywhere.
You know what? It is a free country.
Dude, when you go to the grocery store this weekend, look at all the Chiefs paraphernalia you're going to see on people.
Amy Marsh-Scores is coming in with a Chief jersey on. But it's a free country, except if you can't have a grill in your home. But
happy Friday, St. Louis. It's Hancock and Kelly in for our regular gig. And right now at this regular time, we talk politics. And John, Like it's been since the day he came into office, Donald Trump gives us a plethora of items for discussion this morning.
Yes, he does.
Let's remember how the week started. The markets were going into the tank. They were down 800 points at the start of the day. Why was that? The president imposed tariffs on Canada and Mexico.
Threatened.
No, he had said he imposed them of 25%, 10% on China because, of course, you know, go easy on China. Make sure you give it to Canada and Mexico. And it did get the much-needed result, at least, that Donald Trump wanted to portray, which is it brought Canada and Mexico to the table to, I guess, make some type of concessions to Donald Trump, questions as to whether or not anything was really accomplished. But well, number one, I think I know where you're at on tariffs. You don't like them.
I don't.
But this type of negotiating tactic is something you only get to use once. And now you've broken the seal, correct?
Well, it's, you know, here's what we don't know. We don't know if the grand design of this in its inception was to threaten tariffs and then exact actions by Canada and Mexico. That could have been the intent all along, and if so, kudos to Donald Trump. Or were the tariffs so odious and the backlash so great that they needed to find a way to get out from under them? And both of those are equally plausible. And in the case of Canada, the things that they are doing that they, quote, said they were going to concede to were things they announced in December they were going to do before Donald Trump became president. Now, I don't know that that's the case with Mexico. So, but the fact that the tariffs are averted is a good thing. And, you know, and folks that like Donald Trump are going to give him full credit for being brilliant, the art of the deal, getting this thing done.
But I'm what got done? Because what got done? I mean, let's remember, one of the things he complained about was is this was one of the worst trade deals that have ever been negotiated. Do you know who the trade deal was negotiated by?
Yeah, I do.
Donald Trump.
Yes.
So, I mean, what was accomplished? I don't think
what was accomplished is that Mexico is
going to send 10,000 troops to the border.
To police the border and to help with the fentanyl. So, like I say, I don't know whether this was the grand design all along or whether this was backing off from tariffs because they were so unpopular. But whatever the case, I am very happy that the tariffs are not being imposed. That would have exacted real pain in this country.
Well, if you were watching the market on Monday and it didn't give you whiplash, I bet the next thing did. The President of the United States, meeting with the Prime Minister of Israel, announced a whole new foreign policy for the United States. We're going to take over the Gaza Strip. We're going to relocate 1.7 million people somewhere else. We're going to make Egypt and Jordan just take them. And Donald Trump is going to build a big, beautiful plaza, and it's going to be a big beacon of light for the Middle East. This was immediately... this was absolute lunacy when it was said. It was immediately met with condemnation by almost everybody, including some of the Republicans who were jellyfish. Typically, as it relates to Donald Trump, were like, this isn't going to happen. Your take on Gaza Plaza?
Well, it was never going to happen. And, you know, the Middle East is almost intractable because you've got this Palestinian population, and there's millions of them. Nobody wants them. Egypt doesn't want them. They sealed their borders long before this war began. Egypt doesn't want them. Jordan certainly doesn't want them. Egypt and Jordan, two real American allies in the Middle East. So they can't go there. The Palestinian population is rife with terrorists and have been all along, who are intent on destroying, annihilating, and ending the state of Israel. So, you know, the proposal of Donald Trump's was never going to work. But what could possibly work there? You're going to have some kind of regime that is going to govern Gaza. You know, and if the people of Gaza choose Hamas, which they did in 2005, to lead them, then I don't know how you solve that problem. But, you know, that little dipping the toe in the water of... building Disney World on the Gaza Strip is not going to happen.
Yeah, and whatever the president was talking about, no matter how far they walked it back, would require American troops on the ground in the Middle East, and he said that he's not going to do that. prior to this campaign. And I think that's what a lot of people are wondering. I think people voted, John, for they want gas prices. They go down. They really do want this stuff to stop at the border. They didn't sign up for this Gaza stuff where we're going to take over Gaza. Now we're going to pick a fight with Canada. We're going to close down USAID. I mean, is this what Americans voted for? I don't think so. Which goes to my next question. They did not vote for Elon Musk and Doge. And Donald Trump has given Elon Musk full reign of the United States government. John, we've got a plurocrat and his little minions of tech pros running around taking over government and taking over the systems of government. This is an action that can never be undone because these people now have access, and who knows where that data is gone. And Elon Musk was never elected. We didn't choose for Elon Musk to do this stuff.
Yeah, and you don't go through a confirmation process with a situation like this. Now, I hear the doomsday voices out there saying, you know, this is horrible. I don't know that that's the case. And I do think, look, my favorite president, Calvin Coolidge, had one guy in the White House whose job it was every day to go through the spending of the federal government and recommend cuts. And every day, that's what he did. And if this is what the result is going to be of Doge, and some of the stuff they flagged under USAID has been, I mean, ridiculous that we're spending that kind of money, and we shouldn't spend that kind of money on those kinds of things. In the broader scope, though, foreign aid as executed by the United States of America has been a very valuable tool for our national security, for world stability, and you can't go into this thing and throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you take a surgical scalpel to federal spending and cut out the stuff that's patently ridiculous, then that's a win. If it goes too far, you put our national security in harm's way. And I've not seen enough yet to tell me they've gone too far.
Is it interesting to you, though, that a lot of Christian agencies, this is how they fund these, what do they call them, missions and stuff that go on? I know several of my friends through their churches who've gone down to Guatemala and other places and has built houses and stuff. All of the stuff that got there for them to do this under their mission of their religious actions were being provided by the infrastructure of USAID. John, we're talking about giving $42 billion away with 200 people. That's how many people he wants to keep in the USAID. This isn't coming with a scalpel. This is coming with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, and if that's, now, that can't be done without an act of Congress.
Right.
You can't slash that.
Being done.
Well, I don't know that it can be done.
Well, but it's being done, and that's, I think, part of the process is now we're going to go through the courts.
Right.
It'll all get undone, and guess what? There'll be a nice pile of rubble there. It's the, tear it down, and then, I guess we'll try to rebuild it. That's essentially what we're being told. Hey, speaking of let's try to rebuild it, here in the city of St. Louis, well, you remember the Board of Aldermen, John?
Oh, yes.
Boy, that's the picture of absolute serenity, isn't it?
Yeah.
They were working on the Rams settlement money. They've been doing it for 2 years. Megan Green melts down, cancels her meeting, walks out. As a result, on Tuesday, they had another board meeting where they were going to consider the allocation of the Rams money that we've had for close to 3 years now. And guess what? It got torpedoed. Megan Green has talked about transformative leadership in the city of St. Louis, that they're going to make transformative change. Is this what people voted for, or is this just more broken promises?
Well, it's dysfunction, and you've got a city where they don't, the revenues generated by the taxes in the city can't meet the needs that the city has, and now you've got this pile of money that's a gift essentially because of the lawsuit against the Rams, and they can't decide how to spend it. And they're having these internal fights, Now, maybe it's for the best that they're not doing anything.
I'm thrilled that it didn't pass. And I'm hopeful that the money sits there and collects interest. And You know, this was all done over this process. Remember where they went around and they asked people, community organizations, what do you want to do? And guess what, John? Not a dollar came back saying we ought to spend it on public safety. They did say, hey, we ought to put some in the water.
Yeah.
But then it came back with all of this programs. And it just keeps going back to this was money that was going to be spent through programs from people who proved they can't do their basic functions.
Did the voters of St. Louis, as they were being interviewed about the use of this money, did they think that it was a high priority to provide child care and a college tuition for city employees?
Only city employees. Yeah, right. Only city employees.
Is that something that the rank and file taxpayer in the city thought was a great idea?
Is that the most absurd thing that you've ever heard of?
It's ridiculous. And it's pandering. Because when you look at the low, low turnout that the city has for these municipal elections, the mayor's coming up in March and April, hardly anybody shows up to these things. 20-some percent of the voters show up. And a disproportionate number of those are, I guess who they are, city employees.
Yep.
So this is patently pandering to a constituency to win your re-election. It's, the whole thing is frustrating.
Do you think that we are about to go through a period where local elections are going to get focused back on local issues? And I mean this across the spectrum. Remember, we were dealing with banning books out in St. Charles, etc. But I mean, with infrastructure and with everything that's going on, do you think people are going to be focused back onto the actual issues?
I hope people are focused. And, you know, having these elections in March and April and in odd numbered year is a recipe for lack of participation. I think that's by design.
Hey, that's my buddy John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. It's the Hancock and Kelly Show. Stick around for the news. We'll take you all the way to 10 o'clock before we join Amy and Chris on the greatest radio station on the planet.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Do you ever notice that when you go out of town, sometimes you go to museums and sites that people tell you you should go to?
Yeah.
And then in your own town, you've never gone to the sites and the museums that exist here?
Is that right?
Like, have you ever been over to the World War II or World War Museum?
Yes.
I've never been there.
You've never been there?
No, is it cool?
Yeah, we've interviewed the director twice.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally across the street.
It is.
You ever been to the train museum out in West County?
Oh, yeah. We used to take Johnny there.
What do they call it? The Transportation Museum?
Museum of Transportation.
The Butterfly House out there?
I have been to the Butterfly House, yes.
Well, you've done all this stuff.
I have done all that.
Magic House?
Been to the Magic
House. Did you put your hand on the ball and have your hair stand up?
I put my hand on the ball, Mike.
Did you have hair at the time?
I did not.
No?
No, I have not been blessed with hair for quite some time now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I am starting to lose my eyesight, as you know, so I, or, you know, not lose it, but I, you know, I need,
you need corrective
I need
vision.
Corrective vision, yeah. And I can't get the contacts. I can't touch my
contact. You'd love contacts.
Yeah, but I can't touch my eyeball.
Yeah, you can.
So anyway, I don't know, if having glasses sometimes, you know, these glasses, they're not cheap.
No.
And so when you lay down, you know, maybe on the couch watching television or something, you'll bend your glasses.
Yeah.
And they'll get out of whack.
That's not good.
And so I'm watching social media the other day, and I see this, you know how they put little glasses on little kids, and all of a sudden they see for the first time?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the glasses they give them are these flexible, pliable glasses.
Uh-huh.
So I went into the glasses store the other day, and I said, I want glasses that you would give to a little kid, like the ones that bend and are flexible. Well, they didn't have
them. They don't have them.
But they did have these that I have here. They're vinyl or something, and they can take a beating.
Huh.
Of course, they're not there at that time. We got to get your lenses put in there, and then we'll have them sent to you, okay?
All right.
So just watch your email. It'll tell you it will be there in 24 to 48 hours.
Oh.
So 24 to 48 hours, I get the email, and it says, your item is at the Las Vegas processing facility, right? You've seen this?
Where you got Vegas glasses.
So you can track them. Oh, buddy, these went to Ontario. They went to Vegas. Then they sat in St. Louis. Something that's supposed to take 24 or 48 hours took me like 10 days.
Wow.
But here's the real question is, the whole time, like every day, I'm obsessed with checking thing.
Had you broken your previous pair of glasses?
I lost them.
You lost
them. I lost them.
You probably have to take them off in order to read. Right?
I do, and that's why I wanted glasses that were bendable and flexible, etc. But I'm telling you, I got caught in this delivery heck where you're looking everywhere, waiting for something to show up, and they say, oh, yeah, oh, it's on its way. And then the next day, and, oh, well, actually, it's in Ontario. I don't know. Have you ever had that experience?
I don't think so.
What about when the DoorDash is coming and it says, oh, your food's on the way, and it says that it's 15 minutes away, and then the number just keeps growing to 20 and 30 and 40?
I don't do DoorDash.
You've never done DoorDash?
I have never.
Or some version of it?
No.
You're kidding.
No, I got food at the house, Michael. You eat the food that's at the house instead of having food brought to the house.
Right. But, I mean, you and George Ann just have never thought, hey, you know what, let's order in something.
Well, we ordered pizza.
Yeah?
Yeah. And
well, buddy, I'm here to introduce you.
Well, now the food delivery
stuff's good.
Yeah, so the pizza thing, they do tell you, you know, what's happening to your pizza.
Well, they show you they show you where it's at.
Yeah.
On the way to you.
Oh, they do, yes, yeah. They do.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool as long as they actually come to your house and don't take a detour along the way.
Well, same on this, DoorDash or one of those types of things that I was telling you about. Sometimes you're like watching the guy because you're hungry. And, you know, there he is. He's in my neighborhood. And then he starts going another direction and you're like yelling at the phone. I know people who do what I'm talking about who've ordered like this before know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well,
you're looking at me like I'm an alien.
That would be very frustrating.
Yeah.
But those are very handsome glasses that you're sporting this
morning. Thank you. Would you buy property in the Gaza Strip?
No.
What if it's the American thing to do? I mean, if we were to, have a conclave. Is that even a place you'd ever want to go? Like, I know you being a man
like
of religion,
Israel.
You'd like to go to Israel.
I would
too.
To go to Israel, and see some of the historic sites of Christianity and Judaism.
And Islam.
Yeah, it's all right there.
It's all right there,
it's
yeah.
It's all right there.
I'd like to go to Egypt, too, and see the pyramids. Don't you want to see the pyramids?
Well, I've seen pictures of them.
Yeah, but don't you want to go see them? No?
There's nothing about the pyramid that, I mean, we've got the arch here.
Okay, so when you go out of town, like...
You think Egyptians are coming to St.
Louis?
Do
you just look at it, or have you been up in Sears Tower? Have you been up in the Statue of Liberty?
I've been up in the John Hancock building.
Ah, well, of course.
Which I thought I could get a free ticket. Based on my name,
right?
I was told that that's not a thing.
Uh-uh.
I had to pay the admission price to take the elevator up to the 96th floor, I think, something like that. But that's quite a sight looking out over Chicago from up there.
Yeah,
have you been to the signature room at the top of the John Hancock building?
Yeah, isn't it like it's just like a movie that's filmed there, right? Of some type where there's like a love scene that ends there, et cetera.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been up to that. It's like a bar or restaurant up there.
It is. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's nice.
Our NFL insider lives in Chicago.
Yeah, he's going to be joining us in the next segment. We're going to get a preview of the big Super Bowl game coming up. What's going to happen down there in New Orleans? I've been to the Super Bowl once. Have you?
Never been.
I went to the second Rams Super Bowl, which is the first Tom Brady's first win.
Yeah, the Adam Vinatieri field goal in the final seconds of the game. Yeah,
it was also the first Super Bowl after 9/11.
Yeah.
In this heightened security environment, I remember that the perimeters around the New Orleans Superdome, which is still where they're hosting this, it's like a mile and a half. You had to walk.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it was unlike any security I'd ever been to, including, more than the Democratic Convention, et cetera. The Super Bowl's a fun, fun thing when it comes, and it's just one giant party, John. It takes over a city. I mean, it's overwhelming what happens. There's parties at every restaurant, every major corporation is down there selling its wares, particularly like, the Nikes and Apples of the world. It's quite a scene if you ever get a chance.
I heard some reporting that New Orleans, because New Orleans has hosted the Super Bowl more than any other city.
Right.
I heard some reporting that the infrastructure there, like the hotel rooms, and that it's just not an optimum, because you're talking about people with real money that are flying in and going to the Super Bowl, and the accommodations aren't that great. The infrastructure's not that great. And I don't know.
There was questions about whether or not there'd be any more Super Bowls there.
Right.
I heard the same report you did where the guy was talking about the press gaggle is in a parking garage that's attached to the Superdome. So and they're using, and not that we should care about what the press is up to, but they're using porta potties, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got, look, New Orleans is a lot like St. Louis. It's just an old city that needs a little sprucing up.
With a real crime problem.
Yeah.
Like St. Louis. But it is a magnet for tourism.
Yes.
Unlike St. Louis. I mean, when you are in New Orleans and you're in the quarter and you're walking around, there are people everywhere.
Yeah.
There's not a single place in this city that has anything resembling that amount of foot traffic.
No, unfortunately, you're right. But there are places that it has started and it could continue to grow. I mean, look, the downtown situation is what the downtown situation was. It was there for a while. But I would argue what you see going on in the Del Mar Loop, what you see going on in Old Town St. Charles, what you see happening in Soulard, so throughout the region, Belleville. There's some really cool, neat areas. And, you know, one of the things...
Westport Plaza now.
Yeah, Westport Plaza.
Reborn.
One of the things I remember growing up in St. Charles is the amount of foreign visitors who you would run into people who spoke, you know, British.
Speaking British.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. They did the British accent.
Yeah.
But they were there to see the Daniel Boone stuff and the Lewis and Clark stuff and the... And the Mark Twain type stuff. And, you know, maybe that's what we've got to latch on to and really try to exploit that, because there is, a lot of this is the gateway to the West.
It is. And a rich musical heritage here in St. Louis. You think about jazz music, Miles Davis, so many. Of course, ragtime. You can argue that St. Louis was really the not birthplace, but it was the hub of the ragtime community, American popular music at the turn of the 20th century.
Did I ever tell you Austin, Texas is often associated with music?
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar why that is, but the city of Austin, Keep Austin Weird, way back 4 or 5 decades ago, put a 1% sales tax on their all things at beverage and retail places. That went into a fund that if you were an artist, a musician, and you participated in 30 hours of live music in Austin, and it was regulated and stuff, they provided the health care. And so you literally had, you could participate in their health care system and get cheap health care as a musician. People who have a vagabond lifestyle, not always in the same place, they were able to get it if they put so many hours in. And as a result, they grew a music culture around that by people's life's necessities.
Yeah.
St. Louis blues, baby. We could grow a lifestyle around music.
You could. I mean, you genuinely could. And I think I had heard that about Austin, but I've forgotten it. That was what a concept. And how many years ago, did they come up with
it? And now it's, evolved. And then that scene down in Nashville is really spectacular. It's fun to see cities on the rise. I love seeing Kansas City. I feel like they're living the life we did in the 1990s here in St. Louis. Yeah. They're seeing that rebirth. It would be great for us to continue in a positive direction and with them.
They may be having another party in Kansas City in just a matter of days. Our NFL insider is going to break down Super Bowl 59 when we return right here on KMOX. Frenzied activity on the storied and iconic Bourbon Street in New Orleans, Louisiana. Thousands of fans frolicked and rollicked in anticipation of Super Bowl 59, the apex of drama in the National Football League. As the partying subsides and the playing ensues, who will emerge as world champion? Will the Kansas City Chiefs achieve immortality? With a third consecutive championship? Or would the Philadelphia Eagles put an end to an unprecedented run? Breaking it down is our NFL insider, John Hancock.
Hello, Junior.
Gentlemen, how's it going? We are officially at the weekend before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's usually a Super Bowl surprise, isn't there? Somebody gets arrested. Something happens right before a Super Bowl. It seems like this one's been relatively quiet leading up to the week.
Yeah, and you wouldn't expect that in New Orleans either. But it seems like the teams are both locked in, which isn't surprising with Andy Reid and his unit. But Nick Sirianni, the fact that he doesn't seem like he's got a strong grasp on that team, but they're staying in line.
This is a replay of 2 years ago, the Eagles and the Chiefs. Chiefs going for their third consecutive Super Bowl, never been done before. Have the Chiefs faced a defense quite like Philadelphia so far in the playoffs?
Not in the playoffs. Philly is by far going to be the best defense they face. And I actually talked to some sources in Philadelphia, and, you know, they feel confident that the defense is going to be a bit of a shock to the system of the Chiefs. And even Patrick Mahomes, the refs, or Taylor Swift is going to be enough to stop the Philadelphia Eagles from getting their revenge.
And then the running game, Saquon Barkley, I think, is arguably the best running back in football right now. A lot of talk about him, you know, eclipsing 100 yards, perhaps 150 yards in that game. And the Chiefs' defense is good, quite good. Are they a match for that running game of the Eagles?
So they better hope so. I think with Chris Jones plugging up the middle, that's going to be a big asset. But if Saquon cannot get going, the Chiefs are going to win this game, because if they have to rely on Jalen Hurts in the pocket making throws, it's going to be a long day for Philly, and Kansas City will cruise to a three-peat. And here's the thing with the Chiefs. I mean, this team is like prime Floyd Mayweather. You have to play your A game against them, or you will be punished for every mistake you make. The Chiefs are going to outlast you, and they're going to piece you up in the end. You're going to lose if you slip up. It doesn't matter what you do. This team and this coaching staff is the most well-oiled machine in professional sports. And it seems like they're getting better every single year. You know, you just kind of, we are witnessing greatness, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, it's amazing that you did that without accusing the referees of being in the bag for the Chiefs, too, and your description of their great play.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the refs, they do get some calls, but going back to the Bills game, Josh Allen had the ball with the chance to win. The loss solely falls on his shoulders. The guy just has a mental block when it comes to the Chiefs.
All right, here's what it all comes down to. The NFL insider, everybody's huddled around the radio wanting to know the answer. Who will win Super Bowl 59?
So here's the deal. I said all that stuff about the Chiefs, how they are a well-oiled machine, possibly one of the greatest teams we've ever seen this year. Hit the music. But I'm taking the Philadelphia Eagles. I have Jalen Hurts getting his revenge. I have Saquon Barkley with a 3-touchdown game. I have Cooper DeJean getting an interception. Fly, Eagles, fly. Eagles, 27. Chiefs, 24.
Wow.
That could be a classic.
3 touchdowns for Saquon.
All of them.
All the touchdowns. Wow. Hancock Sr., do you agree with this prediction?
I know we are the voice of the Chiefs here, so I don't want to get too, you know, but I'm rooting for the Eagles. So I'd like to see the Eagles do this. Jalen Hurts is such a great story, you know, and he took the back seat to Tua in college and then emerged as, you know, his second Super Bowl now. How do you rate John, how do you rate Jalen Hurts in the panoply of modern-day NFL quarterbacks?
Yeah, so I think he stands to gain a lot with the win. You know, right now, he doesn't get the respect of a lot of other guys. I don't think anyone really considers him a top-10 guy. He's kind of a fringe top 15. I actually have Baker Mayfield, of all people, ahead of him right now in my current rankings. But I think if he can win this game, he's going to, you know, jump into firmly the top 10 of current NFL quarterbacks.
Under your historic assessment of quarterbacks, if he wins this game, he's another Eli Manning.
Well, I mean, Eli, he's got to get two, and he's got to beat Mahomes for both of them.
John, do you think this could be the end of the Chiefs dynasty if they win? Does Travis Kelce stick around? Does Andy Reid continue to coach, or could we be seeing the final leg of the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think if they win, you know, there's going to be some major changes. Kelce almost certainly is going to retire after a win. Same thing with Andy Reid. And it's going to be interesting to see how this team rebounds without Andy Reid, if he does take some time, if he does step away and calls it a day. If they're going to be able to keep up this excellence, how much of it is due to his offensive brilliance versus the, you know, skill of the players. And I know Steve Spagnuolo, the guy can't be a head coach to save his life or save a franchise, but he's been doing a bang-up job as the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and, you know, I think all indications I've seen is that Andy Reid's coming back. But now you're beginning to have some of those same questions you had with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. You know, could Tom Brady succeed without Bill Belichick? Well, he did. But people are asking those same kinds of questions now about Patrick Mahomes. Can he succeed without Andy Reid?
Absolutely, and he's coming off of the worst year probably of his. The past couple of years have been the worst he's looked as a professional. Still winning games, and he performs at an elite level in crunch time. But it will be interesting to see what happens. When he's kind of on his own, doesn't have one of the greatest coaches the game's ever seen. I think most people have Andy Reid in the top five. And you could even make an argument if he wins this one, you can bump him ahead of Belichick.
Where will you be watching the game, and what will be on the menu?
So I will be watching the game, actually. No secret, I'm not a Chiefs fan. I'm going to continue my tradition of I've turned down a number of invitations to go out and watch the game with people. I will be alone in my apartment with the lights off, willing the Philadelphia Eagles to victory.
What will you be eating?
Probably just water. That's all I need.
There you go. He's the NFL insider. He's John Hancock Jr. Coming to us from Chicago.
Dark
told us.
Water.
Yeah, it's going to be the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll check in with him next week to see how his prediction went. John Hancock Jr., John Hancock Sr., Michael Kelly. Just that's it. Back on KMOX after this. You preached, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, a week and a half ago.
And where was it? In the city, right?
Yeah, Great Day Missionary Baptist Church.
And the theme of your homily or sermon?
Build your house on the rock.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Did usually you test some of the concepts out on me. Was there a theme that came along with building your house?
Use the noted British author James Halliwell Phillips.
Uh-huh.
You remember him?
No, I don't.
19th century British author, very prominent at the time. He wrote one of his more famous works. It was a work entitled The Three Little Pigs.
Huff and Puff and Blow Your House Down.
Yeah.
Buddy, you are good, man. You are good when you tie stuff together. I bet that was a lot of fun. And you were telling me a story earlier today about an individual you met, and it was just really, or that you know.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievably spectacular.
Well, 138 years ago today, into the world, was born James Hubert Hubie Blake. And, I love my ragtime music. Hubie grew up playing ragtime, became something of a stride pianist, and had an absolutely remarkable career. He had the first all-black written, produced, and acted show on Broadway in 1921 as a thing called Shuffle Along. And the chorus of that musical was Josephine Baker from St. Louis. And a number of great pieces in that musical from 1921, one of which went on to become the campaign theme of Missouri's own Harry S. Truman when he ran for president.
I'm just wild about Harry, and Harry's wild about me. The heavenly blisses of his kisses fills me with ecstasy. He's sweet just like
cotton candy. And that's Judy Garland performing I'm Just Wild About Harry, written by Hubie Blake. So Hubie had this incredible career. He wrote a couple of other Broadway musicals and was very noted, was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Ronald Reagan in 1981. When he claimed to be 98 years old in 1981, and we've since come to find out he was only 93 years old in 1981, but it was 1981, the same year he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, that he came and performed in St. Louis at the St. Louis Ragtime Festival, and Traber Tischner, who was a very noted ragtime aficionado and performer in St. Louis, played with the St. Louis Ragtimers, recorded a number of albums, used to teach the history of ragtime at Washington University, had a show on KWMU called Ragophile that I listened to as a youth. Anyway, he had a party at his home, and Hubie Blake was there, and I was, in 1981, a 17-year-old ragtime player. So I was at the party, and I got to meet Hubie Blake, and great guy. And still was playing.
Wow.
And playing well. And got to see him play. This is a guy born in 1886. And so in studying Blake's history, both of his parents were born into slavery. And think about that now.
Wow.
I met a man who was the son of slaves. Now, that's how close the history is in this country. You know, we think about the Civil War, and it was a long time ago. But somebody, I'm 60, you know, to have met a man who was born of parents who were both slaves, who went on to this fantastic career in the music business, achieving great heights. He was very prominent. You saw him on Johnny Carson quite often. He was just a lovely guy. So happy birthday, Hubie Blake.
Wow, what an incredible story. Thanks for sharing.
You bet.
I bet he had to have been inspired that some 17-year-old kid was there at the Ragtime Festival. I mean, you had to be a little bit of an outcast, meaning not
the rest
of them.
He was a character. I came in, shook his hand, and he said, "Nice to meet you," whatever. And then he turns around and he says, "Will you tell these people I'm not the butler?" He was a great guy.
Wow, yeah. What a very incredible story. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, how often do you play Ragtime now?
Every week. I'll play. I don't play every day anymore. And I've noticed some diminution of my skills because of it. But, you know, we've got Tula, my granddaughter, 3 days a week. And actually, I'll play a little bit, you know, with her. She likes my rendition of Old MacDonald. I'll play that.
How much of Ragtime is improvision? So you kind of like know what the keys are going to be, but you can hit some other notes around it and add in your own.
Yeah, it's unlike jazz. Well, so there's different types of ragtime. Classic ragtime, which is the music of Scott Joplin and his contemporaries. Classic ragtime is to be played exactly as written. There's little or no improvisation. So it's not like jazz, which is an improvisational form by design. Ragtime is more akin to classical music than it is to jazz.
It doesn't sound that.
Yeah.
Because it sounds, I take this in the right way, it has a more chaotic feeling to me than typical jazz, and that it's got lots more notes and sounds happening at once.
Well, that's the syncopation. It's it's by design. It ragtime, if you think about a John Sousa march, okay? Dun, 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 dun,
right.
Dun. Ragtime takes that march structure, but it syncopates the music. So if you were going to syncopate the Stars and Stripes Forever, instead of dun, 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 it would be it would be
right.
Syncopated.
I see what you're saying. Now, does ragtime have any influence into what we know to be Chuck Berry?
Yeah.
I mean,
all popular music has some elements of that. American music is great because it's got the African influence and the European influence and all of it. American music is just like America. It's a melting pot. But speaking of music, we've got some great music coming to town here in just over a week, and we're going to visit with the Sons of Cream. I'm really looking forward to this. Malcolm Bruce, who's the son of Jack Bruce, the singer and songwriter with Cream back in the 1960s. He joins us next right here on KMOX. Regular listeners of Hancock and Kelly know that I have a passion not just for ragtime music, but for progressive rock. That's kind of a diverse palette of music, but I do love progressive rock, and you can make a case, a strong case, that the progenitors of progressive rock were Cream, a great band made up of Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker on drums, who was amazing, and of course the great Eric Clapton on guitar. I was fascinated to learn that the Sons of Bruce and Baker make up this band. It's not really a tribute band, but they're playing Cream, and they're coming to the Wildy Theater in Edwardsville on February 22nd. Very, very honored to talk to Malcolm Bruce right now, the son of Jack Bruce. Malcolm, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, great to chat with you. How's it going?
It's going great. You, in your own right, are an amazingly accomplished musician. You've performed with Elton John and so many others over the years. Joe Bonamassa, one of my favorite artists. Tell me about your introduction to music. Your father obviously was on the road quite a bit when you were a young lad. How did you grow to love the music?
Oh, I think it's just the word osmosis, really. You know, you're born into a musical environment, and instruments are lying around the house, and people are making sounds, and you just kind of start doing it yourself from the beginning. So I guess I've always made music. It's just been my life, really.
Yeah, well, and you play multiple instruments, right? You play everything. So Cream, folks would be surprised to know, only actually released 4 albums, but they were excellent. And the band went from what I would call kind of a bluesy rock origin. And by the time of the third album, you were producing progressive rock music. The band's really kind of eclectic that way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a massive... I was listening just before I came on, and you were talking about American music being this kind of, you know, truly multicultural melting pot. And I think that that's what Cream... You know, Cream, as young men, and you know, this is almost 60 years ago now, the early 1960s, and then they formed in 1966. And they were fans of, you know, black American music. You know, this is what they were listening to. I guess American Air Force bases brought it to the UK very early on, Second World War and all of that kind of stuff. So these are the sounds that these guys as teenagers were hearing. And, you know, especially Eric Clapton himself, you know, was a student of the blues. He would listen to, you know, Albert King, Freddie King, B.B. King, and kind of mastered that blues style. And my father, Jack, he came from Scotland, so he had this kind of folk music, Scottish folk music element, but also had studied classical music and discovered jazz as well. And Ginger Baker on drums had been playing jazz before discovering the blues and also been playing African music. So, and all these kind of disparate elements came together. So I guess Cream now, people kind of perceive them as a blues rock, progressive rock band, but they were much more than that. They were this kind of, you know, I like that term, melting pot of ideas, really.
Yeah, and so Kofi Baker, the son of Ginger, is playing drums. How do you and Kofi get along?
We can get on fine, yeah. I mean, we're very different people, but we, you know, we love each other like sort of brothers, I guess, you know. There's still a little bit of that Baker-Bruce thing, if people know the story, you know. But again, there's a lot of misunderstanding around that. I think people tend to think that my dad and Ginger didn't really get on. It's that kind of that cliche of rock bands kind of beating each other up and throwing TVs out of hotel windows and all that kind of stuff. But no, I mean, I think actually my dad and Ginger were very, very close. You know, they loved each other. They came up, they came to success together from nothing, you know, working class backgrounds, becoming world famous and all the trappings and problems that came with that, you know, historically with, you know, coming from a different class and suddenly having adulation and money. And I don't think any of us can really understand what impact that might have had on these people. So yes, I mean, we've inherited a little bit of that. And, you know, a good therapist is always a good solution to these things.
And I guess you and Kofi have had to have known each other almost your entire lives, right?
I think we met when we were very young, but we only started kind of hanging out and getting to know each other when I was about 14. He's a couple of years older than me. So we kind of met when we were teenagers and have, you know, worked together in different projects over the years. So this is really exciting. I mean, we're calling ourselves Sons of Cream. And at the moment we're playing the Cream repertoire, but we're also starting to write original music.
Oh, that's great.
Where that takes us. We've got some interest from a record company, but I'm going to not talk about that right now. But possibly this summer we're going to make a record. So that will be exciting, you know, because, I mean, that's and I'm grateful that you said we're not really a tribute band because we don't see ourselves in that way. There are lots of great tribute bands out there that play the music from another band note for note, and they dress up like them, and people are able to go and have that kind of experience. You know, people that maybe saw Pink Floyd or saw the Rolling Stones or whoever back in the day, and they can experience it as if it was from that time. And we're not doing that. We are, like our parents did, they, every time they played, it was something new. You know, they reinvented it through improvisation. You know, it's, it, and really that came from, you know, that jazz or blues background where people just made up music on the spot. And so every performance is different. So we're excited to do that, but it's also a great opportunity for us to write songs and see where that might take us to.
Yeah, music is such a creative enterprise. I'm really heartened to hear that you're creating new music. Folks can see the Sons of Cream at the Wildy Theater in Edwardsville on February 22nd. It should be a great show. I'm really excited, Malcolm, to hear about the album project. That's good. Have you ever worked with Rick Wakeman, my buddy over there?
Oh, wow. No. He's amazing, though.
Yeah,
I have a lot of respect for him. Incredible artist and a great mind as well. If you know the guy, I've seen him in a bunch of interviews. I've never met him, but I do know somebody that knows him. But I always have a lot of respect for him. He's a proper thinking man's person.
Yeah,
person's man.
And like so many, and like so many musicians over in the UK, he was very influenced by the music of Cream. That music cast a large shadow in the course of musical history. And Malcolm Bruce, I thank you for your time this morning, and look forward to having you Edwardsville on February 22nd.
Looking forward to it, and thank you for having me on the show.
You bet. That's going to do it for this program. Chris and Amy are going to be next. Michael Kelly, John Hancock going to stick around. And the news is next on KMOX.